This month marks the 55th anniversary of the 1965 Australian Freedom Rides, a landmark event for the civil rights of Aboriginal people in Australia.
My deeper objective was for Aboriginal people to realise, hey, listen, second class is not good enough, you know? You don't have to always be first class, but don't always be second class. And don't cop shit, you know, when you don't have to.
But 55 years on, many of the places that those freedom riders travelled to still face inequality and injustice. Today, priced out of the Moree Pool. I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
So Moree is on Gomeroi country, Gomeroi country. It's a big sprawling country town on the New England plains. It's in cotton country, so it's an agricultural town. There's about 14,000 people, maybe 26% of them are Aboriginal. So that's Gomeroi people mostly.
Lorena Allam is the Indigenous Affairs Editor for Guardian Australia.
Now there's North Moree and there's South Moree, and the differences, the economic differences, are pretty stark. So South Moree is traditionally where the missions were. That's a big Aboriginal population on that side. A lot of public housing and a lot of places that have kind of fallen into disrepair. Some of them are boarded up. Mm. And then on the north side, across the river, is the wealthier, whiter demographic. And they're a nice big country homes, really beautiful lawns, big old trees. It's very pretty.
It's essentially segregated.
Yeah, it's a tale of two towns, really. And running through the middle of those two towns is the Mihai River.
We could stand here, in the shade. Yeah, a bit cooler.
The weeds here?
Or this green shit?
The weeds.
They just went berserk after the, when the water dried up.
Yeah.
There's been nothing, no fish, nothing been eating it.
Hmm.
It's just now that it's big open ground, you know, it's all changed. Everything's changed.
Why were you there, Lorena?
Well, I was there because I was contacted by some people in the community.
Oh, yeah. Yama, I'm Polly Cupmore. I'm from Moree. I'm a part of the Gomeroi people. So did you want to ask me questions or...?
Yeah, I'll tell you, when you look around, what are you concerned about?
I'm concerned with all this grot that's in the water. And I do know that some of it, well, you know...
They were really concerned about the health and safety of the kids who basically had only one place to swim in.
You've got no other choice because you want to go out for a swim. The weather's 35 degrees at 10 o'clock in the morning.
But there's all this green slime on the top of the water here.
Yeah. Well, I talk about, like, that's like some form of algae, isn't it? Or
yeah, yeah. What choice do you have when it's $10 to get into the pool? It's too expensive. So the river's the next best thing.
So they were saying that the cost of entry to get into the swimming pool, the only swimming pool in town, was so prohibitive that the river is really the only place they can go.
Mm.
And people's frustration makes a lot more sense if you think about the history, the really contentious history of the pool.
Here, it seemed, was a relatively clear-cut issue.
So up until 1965, the pool was segregated.
For a council bylaw still in force stated that no Aboriginal or person with an admixture of Aboriginal blood could use the swimming pool.
What they used to call the Calabar.
It was just out-and-out segregation.
Yeah.
What happened in 1965?
Good evening. This afternoon, a busload of university students leave Sydney for Walgett in the northwest of New South Wales.
So the Freedom Rides came to town. This was the Student Action for Aborigines bus.
They plan on protesting there the segregation laws that affect Aborigines, both in Walgett and in other rural towns.
Almighty God, we thank thee that thou hast given us life and liberty in this great land, Australia. And we ask now that thy blessing will rest upon these young Australians as they journey out to bring reconciliation and healing among people who have been divided because of the colour of their skin.
There was a bunch of students from Sydney University led by Charlie Perkins.
Don't cop shit, you know, when you don't have to. And you don't have to have cop these white men sneaking around pinching Aboriginal women at night, not being able to sit in a restaurant with nowhere to lay, sitting down the front of picture theatres. That's not on.
Charlie Perkins is an Arrernte man who we all know these days, was a leading civil rights activist at the time, leading that Freedom Ride bus.
You don't have to always be first class, but don't always be second class.
And on the bus were people like Hall Greenland, the historian Anne Curthoys, and former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and former Chair of the ABC, Jim Spiegelman.
I just asked him, that's the manager's prerogative. He claims that you've intimidated him.
No. Yeah. Well, will you buy the tickets?
You've been telling them to come here to put on a demonstration that they can't do.
Would you buy me the tickets then?
Yeah.
Would you buy them for me?
Yeah.
Well, here they are.
So the other person who was on the bus is Darce Cassidy, who passed away recently. He was a young reporter for the ABC and he recorded the whole thing. He made a documentary about it that actually never went to air. Well, it went to air. It didn't go to air until the 90s on the ABC because it was considered too contentious.
Wow.
But it's full of incredible sound of what happened.
They need you to pay the fares and to intimidate anything.
What happened when this bus ride of people led by Charlie Perkins came to town?
They decided they would get a bunch of kids from the mission and try and buy them a ticket to go inside.
How do I know whether he's a suitable person to go in?
Well, how do you ever judge that, Mr. Manager?
Oh, yeah, very often. Very often.
What criteria do you use for admission to these baths?
You've only got to be clean.
Are these lads clean?
Well, if they let me inspect them like they're doing, I'm only going to get a look at them and know they're clean. I haven't said they weren't.
And the pool manager wouldn't let him in. There was a bit of a standoff, and then eventually the mayor came down and said he had agreed to rescind the colour bar, so the kids were allowed in to swim. So the bus of students were really happy. They thought, okay, we've done it, we've cracked the bar, and they drove off to the next town. The very next day, a councillor, Bob Brown, tried to bring another group of Aboriginal kids into the pool and he was denied access.
This is a different Bob Brown, I should just ask.
Yes, it's another.
not the ex-leader of the Greens.
No, this was a different Bob Brown who was a member of the council at the time. So he rang the Freedom Riders and told them what had happened, and the students had a meeting and decided they would go back to Moree and try again.
The only problem in Moree is you fellas coming around here.
Wendy, he's right. There's no problem with the white people in Moree. There's a problem. No, it's all for the Aborigines.
There's no problems with the Aboriginals either.
Well, why don't you allow them in your swimming pool?
On the 20th of February, they came back and Charlie Perkins again bought a bunch of tickets for some kids to go into the pool. And there was this 3-hour standoff where the pool manager wouldn't let them in. And a big angry crowd just grew over those few hours.
And ran a lot of them clean out of swim pool.
What, all the Aborigines?
Every one of them.
No, hunt them out.
What are they going to do?
Well, they might punch him in the head.
Eggs were thrown, rotten tomatoes and fruit was thrown. People were spat on, including Charlie Perkins. It got really, really scary. The police were called and a number of people, not the students, were arrested. Eventually the mayor came down and finally agreed, yes, I will sign this motion to rescind the colour bar, and it was seconded by two other aldermen, and the bar was lifted. But by then it was late in the day and there was a lot of aggro in the air, so the police decided they should escort the students out of town. So they got them all back on the bus and they left town. But the job was done. They had desegregated the Moree swimming pool.
We shall all overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Next,
how the Moree pool is still divided. Lorena, can you describe the Moree swimming pool as it is today?
Yeah, so it's really nice. Like, it's a big complex. It's really well maintained. It's obvious the town's really proud of this. It's a big Olympic swimming pool. There's a slippery like a water slide and a play area for kids. And there are artesian baths. So Moree is quite famous for its artesian baths, and a lot of people come to take the waters and for its healing properties. So there's the artesian pool, a wading pool, an Olympic pool, and then attached to that is this little exclusive area that it's like a day spa as well.
Sounds so great.
It's really nice.
And how much does it cost?
It's $9 for adults, $6.80 for kids. And unlike a lot of other pools who let little ones in for free, Moree charges $2 for children under four. So for a family of four to enter the pool, it costs just under $30. That doesn't include access to the sauna or the gym in the day spa, and you still have to pay an extra $4 to use the water slide.
And how does that compare to other pools in the area?
Well, for example, Narrabri Pool is $5 for adults and $3 for kids. But then I went a bit further and I started to think about what are sort of equivalent fees and charges, because Moree offers more than just a pool. There's all sorts of other cool things that are there. And bearing in mind that some of them are just, you know, your classic old country town outdoor 50-metre pool plus the toddler pool, and others are really state-of-the-art aquatic centres with air conditioning and indoor saunas and gyms and all sorts of fantastic things. Moree Pool is still more expensive than every one of them except one. So it is, Moree Pool is the second most expensive pool in the state.
And which one is more expensive?
Fairfield Leisure Centre. Fairfield Council run three big indoor leisure centres in its council area, and it charges $9.50 per adult for entry, but that entry gets you access to the sauna and there's two heated pools, an outdoor pool, and the sauna and the steam room. So that's what you get for your adult price.
But the steam room and the sauna, I think you said earlier, weren't included in the price for the Moree Pool.
No, that's right. So if you wanted to enter the Moree Pool and access similar facilities, you'd pay between $12.50 and $16.
You know, access to our pool is difficult for Aboriginal people. That's difficult from a whole range of different reasons.
One person I spoke to was Chris Binge, who's the CEO of the Moree Shea Academy. Shea stands for Sports, Health, Arts and Education.
Cost is huge.
Chris said that the cost to take the family for a day out at the pool is, for a lot of people, just impossible.
Considering we're in a drought, considering we're in Western New South Wales, considering that we have a high rate of unemployment, $9 can buy your meal for a family. And going to a pool for an Aboriginal person in town is luxury.
So the pool's quite prescriptive about what it will let you bring in to eat and drink. So you can't bring in anything with glass, and you can't bring in fast food or anything that you might be able to buy at the pool, like hot chips or hamburgers. So if you went and got fast food from McDonald's, they won't let you bring that in. But if you wanted to bring in, you know, sandwiches and fruit, a little sort of packed lunch, the lady at the counter said that's okay.
So anything, when you come into the pool, you pay into the pool, and anything you eat or drink, you have to purchase from the pool. A venture to the pool with a family of, say, mum, dad and two or three kids costs you $100. And I don't know whether the new rule came in, but there is, as I said, prior to that rule, you could actually go and buy hot chips across the road at the shop, which was cheaper.
We'll bring
you could actually mix, you can't even take mix-up cordial in there now. People are getting pulled up and saying, no, you can't have that here, take it out. Or leave. And I've got a staff member that works for me that her family was told, if you eat it, you'll be asked to leave. Fact.
Essentially, it's a kind of segregation. The local community feel it might not be intentional, but the net effect of this high price to get into the pool is that very few Aboriginal people can afford to use it.
How much have we advanced, I suppose, is the question from, you know, Charlie Perkins coming to town with a group of university students and fighting the fight with Moree people, standing beside him saying, you know, this is our right. Has it changed? The question needs to be asked, has it changed? And maybe it's changed a little bit, but I think underneath it really hasn't.
What does the council say about the price?
Well, when I contacted the council, they said they were really disappointed to hear this line of inquiry, that this was something that was being raised with me as an issue. And they said they refute any claim that the fee structure has been determined in a way to exclude any community members or parts of the Moree Plains community. That was the Mayor Katrina Humphreys' words. She also said that the aquatic centre, the pool, has a volunteer board who are independent of the council, so they set the prices for the pool, and those prices are set based on advice that they were given about the value, relative value of Moree and what it offered, the product, as she put it, that they offered to the community, was much higher and different to, say, Narrabri Pool or Mungindai Pool. They're two pools which are quite close, but, you know, by close I mean about an hour away.
So was affordability for local residents one of the criteria that the board uses?
I can't say that it was. And I can't say for certain.
Who's on this volunteer board, Lorena? Are there any Aboriginal people on the board?
No.
It's all white people?
Yep.
And what about on the council? Are there any Aboriginal people on the council?
No.
It's all white people?
Yes.
And they do. They seem to just watch the little Murray kids all the time.
Is the cost of the pool the only problem about Moree Pool that has been reported to you?
And I know I'm there watching them at times and I'm saying, look, if you keep doing that, you're going to get yourself in trouble, and they laugh, it'll leave, you know.
So Judy Duncan.
Born and raised in Moree, with the exception of being sent off to boarding school.
She thinks that people feel under surveillance when they're at the pool.
But there's a lot of, you know, non-Aboriginal people just sit there and they think they own the pool and then, you know.
So the other main problem is that a lot of kids have been in trouble at the pool, a lot of Aboriginal kids.
So what kinds of trouble are they getting in at the pool?
Over this summer just gone, council said they banned somebody for spitting. And they also said that, you know, patron safety is really important. So people running around and dive bombing one another, splashing and making places unsafe is another cause for being banned.
Because what it is, a lot of our kids have been in trouble at that pool because of they tile some of the pools, the hot pools. And whoever did the job in the first place didn't do a very good job of it because the tiles are constantly falling off. I think they've already been retiled twice now and they're still falling off. So our kids get in there, I've been in there, and then you sit down and then all of a sudden, you know, you felt something and the tile comes off. So the kids, being kids, will sit there and they'll have a nice little pile of tiles, you know, and they're getting in trouble and barred from because you've got people that are watching them in the pool and, you know, like hawk eyes, you know, and then reporting them to the guards saying, oh, look at these kids over here, you know what I mean? And it's sad. Like I said, they need to get rid of the tile pools.
So while it's hard to verify this sort of thing with the council, I did ask them about what their exclusions policy is. There's actually online an 8-page exclusion policy that outlines what council will and won't tolerate on council premises in terms of offensive behaviour. And there's a whole page about the pool, and it includes things like no bombing, no running. The problem, though, is according to the people I was talking to, that the process to work off the ban isn't clear. If a kid is banned, how do they get unbanned? No one seems to know.
Does the local community feel that the pool is part of a broader problem within the community?
Yes, they do. So the pool, whether or not it's intentional, excludes people. That's their feeling. The consequence of that is that kids have very little to do.
And so what happens for kids then? It's hot, you can't swim in the river, you can't go to the pool. What do you do? What's there for the kids?
So Chris Binge said to me that
creative.
It means that kids get more creative about making fun, and that's where the problems start.
I'm saying creative.
Yeah.
Other people would say misbehaviour, antisocial behaviour, whatever that, you know, like just an example, maybe, you know, if it's like it's 39 degrees at 9 o'clock in the morning, so council in their parks put the sprinklers on, which is more water.
If the council puts the sprinklers on in the park and the kids have nowhere else to go, they'll run around under the sprinklers and they get in trouble.
kids are going to go and play in it.
Yeah.
It's water.
And they're not allowed to do that?
Water. They don't know it's whatever water, but you know, I'm playing it, they're hot. So,
and it's untreated, so that's the untreated.
Untreated.
The problem with not having access to places to cool off in summer when the temperature regularly goes above 35 degrees or places to hang out with your friends is that kids will make their own fun, and that can sometimes bring them into contact with the police, and that creates a whole other set of issues for the kids. So the people in the community are saying, we don't want that for our kids. We really want a better future for them. We're tired of having this endless cycle going on generation after generation, and we want them to have the opportunity to have fun here in their own country and feel like they belong.
After spending some time in Moree, what do you get the feeling, or what does the community feel that the council's priorities are in Moree?
It's hard to know. The council are under pressure to maintain this much-loved public asset, and swimming pools are expensive. Councils all over the country know how hard it is to keep a pool up and running, and particularly if you're in a drought-stressed community with not a lot of income, those things are very expensive. But other councils have gone down a different route in terms of providing those services to the community. So they will either make the pool entry free, or they will find ways to reduce the fee so that people can access it. So like at you know, Tumut Pool, it was free. Menindi Swimming Pool has a gold coin entry. So I'm not saying they're equivalent to the Moree Aquatic Centre, but there are other options that I think the council could be persuaded to explore. That's what the community were telling me anyway. You know, I put that to the council, and the council said that they thought the last open day they had at the pool was really successful, and they would consider doing that again in the future.
Do people call this effectively financial segregation?
Yeah, they do. So in the context of Moree Pool's very checkered history, they do feel very much that it is another kind of segregation. They are residents of a town where the only safe and healthy place to swim is denied them because they can't afford to attend. And there are no alternatives being offered to enable them access to that pool. And they feel that they are unable to access a public utility that it should be enjoyed by all the residents because of their financial status.
You can read more from Lorena Allam at theguardian.com. This episode of Full Story was produced by Ellen Leibeater and Joe Koning. Our executive producer is Miles Martignoni. I'm Gabrielle Jackson, filling in for Laura Murphy Oates while she's on holiday. Thanks for listening. If you're on an app that has ratings or reviews, we'd love to hear from you. That's it for today. See you Monday.